This is the Heritage Radio News, bringing you top food stories from down the street and around the world with your Heritage Radio News team, Erica Wides, Patrick Martins, Jack Kinsley on sports, and Mike Edison on weather.
Welcome to Heritage Radio Network News. Today is June 23rd, 2016. I'm Erica Wides, co-anchoring today with Mike Edison, who's also on weather, and Jack Insley on sports. Mike, what do you got for us from the world of weather this week?
Some like it hot. And it's a good thing because it's hot.
Yeah, it's starting to feel that way. All right, and we'll be hearing more about that later, and we'll be hearing from Jack Insley on sports, who's out in the field, so they say. Our top stories this week: your calorie intake is too sugar heavy, your food intake is too takeout heavy, and your mayonnaise is too fancy for its own good. And now for this week's top story. Last year, for the first time ever, Americans spent more money on food outside of grocery stores than in them. According to data collected by the U.S. Census Bureau and the USDA, Americans are spending more of their food dollars at U.S. eating and drinking establishments than ever before, nearly $55 billion at bars and restaurants versus the $52.5 billion they spend on groceries. There are many factors contributing to this historical shift, ranging from a drop in meat prices, the availability of some groceries at dollar stores, discount big box stores like Walmart, and the surge of women in the workforce that began in the mid-70s. To give you a sense of that, in 1950, the female labor force participation rate was 34%. Now, it's at 56%. That's a lot more moms out there working instead of shopping for food and cooking dinner. The USDA estimates that food prepared outside the home now accounts for 41% of food purchases and 32% of caloric intake. So is this trend toward eating out a problem? Well, it hasn't been great for American health, that's for sure, as the amount of calories Americans consume away from home has increased from 18% in 1978 to 32% in 2008, and food consumed away from home is notoriously higher in salt, saturated fat, and sodium, while lower in dietary fiber. Other studies cite the rising American propensity for dining out as a potential contributor to the rise in U.S. obesity. I mean, have you seen the size of those pasta portions at Olive Garden? And let's not even get into those endless breadsticks. And then there are those millennials. Ugh, always those millennials. According to a Boston Consulting Group report, the largest generation in American history eats out 3.4 times a week compared with 2.8 times a week for non-millennials like myself. And they're more likely to get it to go than to eat at the restaurant. While that's good for the restaurant business, it's not so good for the bottom lines and lower bodies of those rapidly approaching age 40 millennials.
Maybe we'd have time to cook if we didn't work four jobs trying to pay off our student debt, Erica.
Uh-huh. What are you trying to say, Rachel?
I think y'all just don't know how to cook.
Actually, millennials are cooking more than any other generation in the past or so, I've heard. So, or are more interested in cooking. So I don't know, but
interested in cooking is not the same as cooking.
Interested in cooking is not the same as cooking. Well, ordering from Blue Apron and throwing it all together is different.
Cooking is hip. Cooking is now. Cooking is happening.
Yeah,
I know how to cook, but I guess I also know a lot of people who don't. So
you know, the thing is, though, there's so much more available, high quality prepared food now in the market. Mm-hmm. I think that's the difference, and that's why this is changing. Because you can go into any drugstore, supermarket, anywhere, and buy decent prepared food, whereas a generation ago you couldn't. Yeah, I mean, when I was your age, the options were much more limited. So I think that's really what's causing this also.
Yeah, and gas station sushi isn't going to kill you anymore.
Right, but you can go to like a Whole Foods, go to their prepared foods bar and get an incredible meal that would take you hours and dollars to make at home.
It's because no one has any patience anymore. We live in a convenient society. Everybody
that's
wants everything,
true.
And they want it fast.
We want it fast.
It's the internet generation. They just want to push a button and have it in front of them.
All right. Well, first,
let's not pretend that it's the internet generation. It's everybody.
It's everybody. All right. Before we get into a brawl here in the studio, let's go to story two and our own Mike Edison, who is co-anchoring.
All right.
Week.
Well, thanks, Erica. Mm-hmm. As reported on Grub Street and pretty much every other website that likes to get snarky with hipster foodies, Rachel, Empire Mayonnaise, the Brooklyn-based artisanal mayo shop, is closing down amidst a loud chorus of snorting and chuckling from those who thought artisanal mayonnaise was just one toke over the line.
Sweet Jesus.
Indeed. Empire Mayo had become the poster child for handcrafted condiments gone too far. An entire store dedicated to mayonnaise? Oh, the humanity. You could hear everyone screaming. One could only ponder what was next. A store dedicated to ketchup? or mustard. Actually, I would be all over a mustard thing. I probably have 15 different kinds of mustard in my house at any given time for every conceivable mustard situation. Spicy deli mustard for hot dogs and turkey sandwiches, Dijon for my lovely vinaigrette. That's right, I do make a lovely Dijon vinaigrette. Hot English mustard for some rare roast beef, wasabi, some whole grain stuff, Polish and German varieties, you get the idea. But a store dedicated to mayonnaise sounded like a satire itself, and in fact, it was mocked pretty soundly, not just in the snarky food press, but also on Saturday Night Live, which would tell you right there they were actually doing something right. Founders Elizabeth Vallow and Sam Mason took it on the chin and forged on, and their mayo can be still found in Whole Foods, Eataly, Dean & DeLuca, just to name a few of the retail outlets. And I have to say, I get why people are having a moment of schadenfreude watching them close their Prospect Heights kitchen, especially when they cited as an excuse that the neighborhood was getting expensive and received a large course of well does. But seriously, every kitchen in the world is whipping up its own version of alioli oli and mayonnaise. And for those who enjoy what I personally consider a goyisher condiment, I say, why the hell not? And it's easy to laugh, but I don't think the automatic dismissal of micro-artisanal food is really helping anybody out. I mean, as we always say around here, isn't better better? Look for Empire Mayo to reopen in more affordable territory, Weehawken perhaps, though the mayo itself still costs $8 a tub, considerably more than a squeezy tube of Hellman's Finest.
You know, there is a store dedicated just to mustard that is opened in New York. Mai, the French mustard company, just opened a store that sells just mustard and has a tasting bar.
That sounds okay. But then again, if you have just mustard, why not have a shelf of, saucisson? You know, some chorizo, some charcuterie.
To go with
something
it,
else, some provisions.
An in-house bakery, yeah.
I mean, we've seen stores dedicated to hot sauces, too, but that always seems more like, you know, airport novelty than actual gastronomy.
The three of us, we're all native New Yorkers, basically, East Coasters. So what the hell is Miracle Whip, anyway?
it's a conspiracy
it's
by the
gross. Goyim. Gross. My Jewish cousins in Indiana used to eat it, which, I, you know, that's like double goyish because they're Jewish living in Indiana. It's like two negatives don't make a positive. But they used to eat Miracle Whip, and I was appalled by it. It's so sweet. It's gross. Anyway, all right. Well, thanks, Mike, for that fascinating tale on the demise of the Empire Mayo Empire.
We'll talk more about mustard later, perhaps.
Okay, thanks. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, our famous Fast Food Minute.
Today's program is brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
All right, it's time for everybody's favorite segment here on Heritage Radio Network News. It is our weekly Fast Food Minute, brought to us, of course, by Cane 5 Vineyard and Winery. And for our first segment today in our Fast Food Minute, we are going to our own Rachel, the producer.
Thanks, Erica. For any transplant from the South, Brooklyn may be lacking in breakfast essentials such as grits or chicken and waffles. But luckily, the beer makers at Other Half Brewing in Carroll Gardens are bringing Southern sunshine to the North with their breakfast beer. Grits and Greens, sold at both their tap room and in a can, is a buttery, toasty pilsner made with grits straight from Georgia and hops from the deep, deep, deep South. That's what it says.
Deep.
While the brewers don't really recommend you have it for breakfast, they do reflect that making beer is a lot like making 2,000 pounds of breakfast cereal, and the resulting water, the leftover grains, even looks like mushy grape nuts. But if we're not supposed to have beer for breakfast, please explain the repeal of the blue laws last week, Mike.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because the same buzzkill who was trying to prevent the blue laws from being repealed, as of a week ago, you could only get booze on at noon on a Sunday at your brunch. Now, like other civilized countries, we can at least get a Bloody Mary.
We can have a breakfast beer.
Hey, listen, I'm all for beer for breakfast.
It's okay.
I love a morning beer buzz.
You can have beer with breakfast, not for breakfast. I think that's the rule. It's okay if you pour it over your cereal.
That's not what Chris Christopherson said.
I pour Bailey's on my cereal. That's after I have my first beer in the shower. But anyway, the same buzzkill in Albany, an awful villain, an awful our own Lord Voldemort, is named Assemblyman Robin Schiminger. He's a Democrat from Buffalo, is now trying to stop the sale of alcohol in movie theaters.
Oh, my God.
I
the
know.
Humanity.
It's back to Prohibition times for Mr. Schimminger. Boo hiss, boo hiss. He says if alcoholic beverages are being provided to the people sitting next to them, they'd be quite surprised. That's what he told the New York Post. There are other people, though, who sort of get the idea. If you've ever been to a movie theater anywhere else in the civilized world, in Europe, for instance,
yeah,
you can always get a glass of wine or a cup
right.
of beer.
They have pubs, right?
It's
bars.
Not a problem. And if you can go to the opera and get a sippy cup full of brandy, you know, it reminds me a little bit of sort of like the laws where, you know, you're not supposed to have an open container in Central Park, but when the Philharmonic plays, the mayor's always turned the other way for a bottle of Chardonnay. But try drinking a can of Ballantine in a paper bag, and, you know, under Giuliani and Bloomberg, you'd find yourself wearing Irish bracelets and on your way to the Hooskow.
It's all about class, isn't it? But there's an Alamo Draft House opening in downtown Brooklyn.
That's
yeah.
right.
But I think they're a restaurant, though. I think it's not the same as a movie
just
theater.
Alcohol.
And perhaps one of our listeners can inform me on that, but I think they operate under a different business license.
Just alcohol and snow caps.
Right. So next time you're going to see a 3D IMAX movie for $39, don't expect to get a $5 pint.
Or just sneak it in like I do. All right. Well, thanks, Mike. Dave Tatt, what have you got for us in the Fast Food Minute this week? This is Dave Tatt, the producer, by the way.
The producer?
I mean, sorry, the engineer. Sorry, I'm hungry.
I was like,
engineer. Sorry,
I'm not aware of this development.
Yeah, we've been promoted. Good.
All right, well, another beverage-related story here. Good old Starbucks has been plagued with lawsuits lately. Claims that the coffee is skin-meltingly hot, that iced lattes are too much ice and not enough terrible coffee. And now a U.S. judge has looked over the cases and decided that you can indeed sue Starbucks for underfilling your cup of coffee.
Woo!
This is because he, quote, finds it probable that a significant portion of the latte-consuming public could believe that a grande contains 16 ounces of fluid, end quote. The two plaintiffs are claiming Starbucks baristas are intestinally told to leave a quarter inch of space at the top of latte cups. And unfortunately, this was demonstrated as being somewhat true when the anchors at the Today Show brought in grande lattes from various Starbucks around the city and measured them. Who knows how the lawsuit will end, but let's hope it goes the way of Ticketmaster and everyone ends up with a lot of free, underfilled lattes in their mailbox.
Wow. Fascinating. Oh, yeah.
Does anyone know what I can do with my free Ticketmaster tickets yet? Has anyone figured that
know.
Out?
No, I heard it's...
No, I heard they're awful terrible
I think you
shows.
Can go see, like, Dierks Bentley or things of that nature.
I think you can see the Radio City Christmas Spectacular.
Really?
I know you want to go to that. No, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I never used the Ticketmaster app. The last time I used Ticketmaster, you had to, like, go and line up or call the 800 number.
What? Yeah, go and line up like in Macy's in
yeah,
the back
like
where they have
the Smithhaven Mall. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Right, in the office. Well, we're old, but
right. Yeah.
It's all a scam anyway. You know, I wish the toll ticketing industry really needs to be rebuilt from the ground up. And I wish, and I, you know, really, this is a call to people in power. You know, the Bruce Springsteens and AC/DCs of the world who can do it. Some artists have done it. Pearl Jam.
Mm-hmm. Louis C.K.
You know, have done these things where they've cut out the useless middleman and that vampire tax. Oh, here's a right. service charge. For what? I'm using the freaking
yeah.
internet. It's not worth $17. A service charge, you know, is
okay.
something else.
Not food, Mike. Let's stay on focus. Stay on topic. All right. And speaking of being angry and resentful about horrible things, Donald Trump may be beloved by some of his supporters, but the rest of us, well, we really don't like him, and neither do some business owners around the country. Consider the owner of Minneapolis-based Urban Bean Coffee to be among the latter. Greg Martin has banned Trump supporters from patronizing his shop's two locations in the city, reports City Pages. Martin took to Urban Bean's Facebook page to make his feelings known following the candidate's crass reaction to the horrific nightclub shooting in Orlando. The Facebook page has received plenty of reaction, both positive and negative, but Martin believes the ban is a pretty simple issue. I don't know that it's even that controversial, he told City Pages. We just don't feel like there's room for that kind of BS in our store. And a restaurant in Colonial Heights, Virginia, refused service to a family wearing pro-Trump t-shirts and his famous Make America Great hats again. Hell no, I'm not serving them, an employee reportedly exclaimed upon seeing the family's attire. In March, a steakhouse in Louisville, Kentucky, actually banned Trump himself. But the owner backtracked after he received a death threat. You see who his followers are. A lot of them are lunatics, he said. It only takes one lunatic to kill someone.
So true.
So true.
Well, I'll tell you what. If someone came into my shop and they were wearing some sort of racist slogan on their shirt, I'd turn their asses around and, you know, give them a good boot. And I think, you know, the Trump Make America Great is just a dog whistle for I don't like people who aren't white. Mm. Sorry, but there it is.
Yeah, but then, you know, what if a gay couple comes in and wants you to make their wedding cake and you don't believe in gay marriage?
Yeah, that's not the same thing. Okay, because that's not hate speech. That's and by the way, it's, we're getting into some very tricky territory here, because the First Amendment doesn't protect private enterprise. That's the government's guarantee to free speech. But I don't think racism or
hate
speech. Homophobia and this sort of thing is something that we really need to discuss. It's just an is.
Yeah.
It's just an is.
All right. Well, that's it for our fast food minutes. Coming up after the break, support of less sugar in the food at McDonald's coming from a very surprising place, a candy company. We will be right back.
Hi there. I'm Greg from Kapow. Visit us at kapow.com to check out our unique collection of everyday reusable products designed to help you do more with less. C-U-P-P-O-W.com.
All right, we're back. Heritage Radio News streaming live from Bushwick. Juan Roberta's here. And Erica, what do you got next for us? Something equally controversial, I hope.
Oh, this is beyond controversial. Mars, not the planet, the world's biggest candy company, wants Americans to eat less sugar. Hello, pot? It's the kettle. Yes, you heard me right. The maker of M&M's, Skittles, Twix, Milky Way, and dozens of other sugary products wants you to follow the USDA's recommendation that we get less than 10% of our daily calories from sugar. And so, according to Reuters, the company is trying to stop McDonald's, maker, of course, of the popular M&M's McFlurry, which, if you don't know, is a milkshake candy combo, from putting Mars's colorful sugar bombs into McDonald's blended ice cream and candy dessert, because the resulting concoction is sugar overdrive. Mars's logic is that since people already consume too much sugar, there's no reason to create desserts like those McFlurries or Burger King's Snickers pie, both of which wipe out a whole day's worth of recommended sugar in one serving and then some. To put this all in perspective, an M&M's McFlurry contains 89 grams of sugar, and a large chocolate blizzard with M&M's tops out at 150 grams. The 10% rule recommended by the USDA means that a 2,000-calorie-a-day diet should only contain 200 calories of sugar per day, or around 50 grams. The McFlurry is nearly double that amount, and the Blizzard is triple. Last year, Mars publicly backed the federal health guidelines capping the recommended daily amounts of sugar. But Mars isn't exactly a paragon of healthful products, so it's not as if it's playing no role in the American diabetes epidemic. A 1.7-ounce bag of M&M's, the standard size, already has 30 grams of sugar. But food writer and nutrition professor Marion Nessel ventures further. She says they must think it's to their marketing advantage, obviously. Mm-hmm. Mars also states that it will help the fast food giant reformulate this dessert monstrosity to make it less sugary. What are they going to do, puree tofu into it? Rival candy maker Nabisco hasn't made a peep yet following Mars' announcement, so no worry, the Oreo McFlurry is still here to stay, for now.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Mars is getting on the health game.
Yeah, unbelievable. No, I'm very cynical. I believe it's obviously driven by some marketing, cynical marketing plan.
I mean, if some idiot's going to eat one of those McFlurry things, they kind of deserve to eat all that sugar. I mean, come on, if you're that stupid that you're going to ingest that. Come on. Let's just hasten the death process. Get it all over with. Take the DNA out of the gene pool. All right. And on that note, let's see what Mike's got from the weather room. Why, Mike, in front of the green screen, what have you got for us this week?
All right. From the sound of that, a Black Sabbath record. Once again, we are looking at record-breaking, mind-melting temperatures this summer. It is hot, 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 and this weekend could set the pace with a good slice of the entire country baking in heat of 100 degrees or higher, and I promise you, this is just the beginning of a summer in hell.
Maybe we're going to have to go drink McFlurry to cool off.
My mentor, the hippy-dippy weatherman, once said you should never confuse a Canadian cold front with a good Mexican high. I don't know what he would have said. That was George Carlin, everybody, if you were born, you know, after
1988.
Yeah. I don't know what he would have said if confronted by what legitimate meteorologists, unlike myself, are calling a heat dome. As reported by Gizmodo, a heat dome is a high-pressure ridge that pushes temperatures way, way up, and this one is essentially giant. Let me see if I can sort of explain this. According to the Capital Weather Gang, the way we measure the intensity of a high-pressure ridge is geopotential height. And this weekend, the height is expected to be outside the normal climate range, according to a large group of computer model simulations. And they're predicting this ridge will be more extreme than anything we have observed in this particular climate data going back decades. Although heat domes are rare, they are surprisingly, or not so surprisingly, becoming more frequent in recent years, and as ever, you can point your finger at global climate change. And if you think you've got problems, a heat dome in Iraq last year pushed the heat index to the highest ever recorded temperature on Earth outside of an oven. It was 165 degrees in Iraq. That's also the temperature the USDA recommends as the internal temperature for well-cooked chicken. In other news, California is on fire, and all of this extreme weather means lots of rained-out ball games this summer. Back to you.
You know, though, that M&Ms melt in your mouth, not in your hand. So I say put them back in the McFlurry if it's going to be that hot.
165 degrees.
Good God. Personally, I cook my chicken to less than that because I like it better. I'm willing to take the risk.
No, 165 degrees is a nonsense number. That's that's so you can cook out all the chemicals.
Yeah, right.
I mean, basically, if you have a good, you know, a heritage, you know, chicken, a well-bred chicken, a humanely sourced, non-chemical jacked chicken, the same as with pork. The temperatures recommended by the USDA are so high.
Ridiculous.
I mean, there hasn't been a single case of trichinosis in this country.
No, it's been eradicated.
Exactly. And we're still living under this myth that our parents taught us that you need to, you know, nuke a pork chop for it to be edible.
Until it's dust.
And basically, you know, if you get a nice pork chop, you can serve pork sashimi. It's safe.
A nice pork chop. All right. Well, thanks for that, Mike. Coming up after the break, we're going to hear from our own Jack Inslee reporting in on one point guard's addiction to candy. Does it ever end?
Sweet.
We'll be right back.
Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
All right. Can you dig it? Those happy sounds can mean only one thing. Jack Inslee on the road reporting on sports. What do you got?
Hey, guys. So another NBA story here. First, congratulations to LeBron James and the Cavs for winning the title. Pretty incredible Game 7. But some other news here in basketball. The Knicks shocked the NBA world this week by making a trade for former MVP and All-Star guard Derrick Rose. Most fans in New York, however, are focusing on the risk that comes along with the 27-year-old who has battled numerous injuries throughout his career, namely those on his knees. Can this rose bloom again in a new garden? Maybe, if he drops his junk food addiction. So I'm no doctor or dietitian, but surely a candy and fast food habit can't help in avoiding injuries. In a 2010 interview with ESPN, Derrick Rose said, "It's just my poison. Everybody's got their poison, and mine is sugar." So Derrick Rose did quit fast food, but he remains a sugar fiend. He continued to say, quote, "McDonald's is over with, but chips and candy and stuff, it's going to be hard to get away from that." So once Derrick Rose's sugar addiction became public, Skittles, that's right, the company Skittles, installed a vending machine in his home. Rose was the first to admit that this wasn't the best idea, and given his tendencies, I've got to agree. He said, "I'll be having binges where I'll just eat tons and tons of candy. I could go without eating candy for like 2 weeks, but right when I have the first taste of candy in a day, I'll go through 2 pounds, for real, like 2 pounds. My mom used to hide my candy when I was younger, so I wouldn't go in there and eat all of it. It was bad, man." So maybe his new friends and teammates, Melo, Porzingis, can stage an early intervention before things get out of control in the Big Apple. And I'm hoping the only thing sweet about Derrick Rose is his jump shot in New York.
Wow. Maybe he can be the spokesman for the new M&M free McFlurry.
I wonder if I made enough noise if Budweiser would put a keg in my shower.
Probably. It's worth asking. It's worth asking. Maybe the Cauliflower Commission will come and plant some in my backyard or something. Seems like that's all I eat these days. All right. Well, thanks, Jack Inslee from The Road and the World of Sports. We're going to take another break. And when we come back, we have a very special guest, our own Jimmy Carbone from Heritage Radio Network, with this week's op-ed piece. We'll be right back.
This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network News from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Our op-ed this week comes from our own Jimmy Carbone of Beer Sessions Radio, who's just returned from a stint at Upstate Farms and Breweries. Hi, Jimmy.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Hi, Jimmy. Thanks for having me on the show.
Welcome to the newsroom.
I want to talk about, there's a coincidence, or is there not, that Governor Cuomo, when he banned fracking, and there was a rise of the New York craft beverage industry around the same time. So that's what I'm going to talk about for the op-ed. Flashback to summer 2011. I was in Sullivan County, and neighbor versus neighbor were pitched against each other. Either lease your land to the energy company for fracking or not. Ban fracking or not. The future of New York State value-added farm drinks hung on the balance. At that time, Omegang Brewery near Cooperstown threatened to leave New York State if their neighbors were allowed to lease to fracking. Winemaker and grape farmer Pete Saltonstall of King Ferry Winery in the Finger Lakes flew over fracking areas in Pennsylvania and made a video showing the dangers. We debated, protested, and started a group called Chefs for the Marcellus, with chefs like Mario Batali and Bill Teleplan going to the governor, with the intention of focusing on positive, long-term support for New York State value-added agriculture and in opposition to short-term fracking. The local food movement was at a key moment in New York State. Would the state go the way of Vermont and celebrate its pure products and great agricultural potential, or would it sell out to energy companies and take short-term profits? Then Governor Cuomo came around and banned fracking in New York State. He overhauled the laws and created the farm beverage licenses, and took a positive long-term approach. And the results? Going back to Sullivan County, actor Mark Ruffalo, who was a leader of the anti-fracking movement based in Catskills near Livingston Manor, he's now applying the effort he was giving to anti-fracking instead to sustainability in general. For example, his wood, reclaimed barn wood was used in the construction of the Catskill Brewery in Livingston Manor. And Catskill Distillery, which was in the middle of the battleground in Bethel, also in Sullivan County, has expanded its production and barrel-aging facilities thanks to the governor. It will soon be distributing New York-made spirits all over the country. These two success stories will be profiled in the July episode of On the Road with Beer Sessions Radio. From strife in 2011, that region of New York is growing now that fracking has been banned. And with sustainability and focused projects, new breweries, cider makers, growing distilleries, all using New York farm ingredients. Governor Cuomo made a difference, at least to these people upstate, focusing on long-term, value-added agricultural development via craft beverages, malt facilities, grain farmers, new breweries, and distilleries. In fact, our new series was funded by a New York craft beverage grant that is part of this long-term effort to support agricultural communities in New York State. So thanks for everything, and that's what we've been working on. And check out On the Road with Beer Sessions Radio when we go around the state.
That is the single greatest op-ed I've ever heard in my life. I mean, there's no question about
it. It's one
of
the first positive stories we've ever done.
No, no fracking, more beer. How can
no
you argue with that?
Beer.
No candy. And Rach, I didn't have a conclusion, but I think you guys are the conclusion.
I almost bought a house in Livingston Manor about 10 years ago now. I wish I had.
But I think it makes good common sense. Obviously, you know, you don't want to sell out for short, destroy your land for short-term money. Yeah. And we have, you know, New York State, which is producing so much great stuff. And this does actually tie in, you know, with the governor signing on to allow beer for breakfast, as we're talking about Sunday brunch. No, because what he cited, yeah. Governor Cuomo, what he cited was that we have so much good local craft beer, and he wants to encourage that business.
Yes.
And being able to drink it a little bit early or for Sunday brunch is only going to encourage upstate beer makers and winemakers.
And movie theaters, too.
And what?
And in movie theaters,
oh,
too.
Oh, and movie theaters, too. Yeah, especially. All right. Well, that just about wraps it up for us here at Heritage Radio Network News. If you have a story idea you want to hear, or you have any comments or questions, you want to get in touch with any of us, you can drop us an email at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Thanks for listening. As always, this show airs live 2 o'clock on Tuesdays, and then will be posted on our website immediately thereafter, and always on iTunes and Stitcher. And also remember, Heritage Radio Network is member and listener supported. So do your part, people. Go to that website and click that button and join the family here. So thanks to my co-anchor for the week, Mike Edison.
Thank you, Erica.
Thank you. Rachel, the producer, as always, Jimmy Carbone on the op-ed.
Thank you. Jack Inslee,
somewhere out in the world of sports. And, of course, Dave Tatt in the engineering booth, not a producer. We'll see you all next week.